Except I feel like I've just been given an allele and sure whether it goes there.
It's a hard act to follow, but we've done this routine enough times, so it's comfortable. Delighted to be with you. 2 minutes of history. You should know that New York City represents almost 50% of all public transit in the United States. So there's New York and there's every other place when it comes to public transit issues. And it's not surprising, therefore, that it's not the national issue that it perhaps it should be. New York subway system was built by the city of New York. Capital costs were paid 100%, and the theory was a very simple and very obvious and very sound one, and that is if you create more ways of people getting into the central business district, land values will go up, real estate assessments will go up, and the taxes collected will enable the city to fund the capital investment in the subway system. Theory worked for maybe 50 years, except for the fact that, number one, the city never operated the system. The system was leased out to private companies, and thereafter, those companies, because the city in its regulatory capacity limited the fare, no private company could generate enough revenue with the politically capped fare structure to maintain the system adequately. In addition, the suburban rail systems in New York and the bus systems were privately owned and privately financed, but again, for many reasons, fundamentally because there were both regulatory restraints on what could be charged, and in some cases it was the market price, these systems couldn't be self-sustaining. The political response in New York to those economic facts was to take them over publicly. They had no choice because this city, obviously, as Bob's pointed out, can't exist without a functioning transit system. So the government took them over. Initially, the city of New York took over the subway system, and then one by one, the various independent bus lines in New York, and then the state in various capacities after the bankruptcy of the Central Railroad and the other railroads that service New York, the state took those over. And in the late 1960s, they were combined and put under this agency you've heard referred to as the MTA, a state public authority. The authority was governed by a board, all of the members of which appointed for a fixed term, for the reason that it was intended that they make decisions about fares independently of elections which take place every 2 years or 3 out of 4 years for if you include the mayoral election in New York and the gubernatorial and legislative elections. And the independent structure, if there's a moment, I'll refer to it later because it's very germane, as Bob pointed out, to the ultimate power to do what has to be done to ensure the survival of the system. Nonetheless, when the system was put under the MTA in the late 60s, it was done with great fanfare. And there was an immediate response. It was a period of optimism and in some respects, economic growth. The governor started construction or urged, and he was, because of his point of authority, he was the dominant player in the field, urged that any available federal transit aid, which is relatively small in coming and relatively new, should be used to construct two new lines, one on the Second Avenue in Manhattan and the other an additional line to Queens, both of which in a world of unlimited resources were highly desirable. But nobody appeared to pay any attention to the fact that the existing system was deteriorating at a very rapid rate. By the late 70s, the degree of deterioration had made parts of the system almost dysfunctional. The public displeasure with the system was beginning to become a political reality and the media were covering with great relish every breakdown and every fire and every incident that occurred, and the delays in people getting to work either on the suburban rail system or on the subway system became legion. It was the favorite lead story of the 6 o'clock news every night in New York. The political system's response to that initially was simply to say, well, let's not raise the fare. And therefore, we won't incur additional displeasure from the public by raising the fare. And that, of course, reduced the amount of money available for current day-to-day maintenance of the system and compounded the problem even more. When the system finally reached the point in 1979, 1980, where clearly it was in jeopardy of becoming unsafe. Finally, I'm proud to say I had a little something to do with this, but finally the legislature recognized, the legislature of the state of New York recognized the fact that something had to happen and agreed for the first time to give the MTA authority to issue debt and borrow money in the marketplace. And the biggest objection that legislators had to that when I proposed it was, well, the debt service is going to increase your operating budget, and therefore fares are going to go up. And I said, absolutely correct. If you don't provide any additional source of revenue to service that debt, fares will go up. And they said, well, that's not a good thing. And I said, well, you only have two choices. One is to have the fares go up, and the other is to have the system become totally dysfunctional. And maybe when you recognize those are both unattractive choices, you'll recognize that you have to create additional revenue streams. So we did enact a plan, and interestingly enough, the single biggest infusion of federal funds into mass transit occurred during the Reagan administration. I'm not sure how conscious the administration in Washington was of that fact, but it was true. That shot in the arm enabled us to start the rebuilding process. And the legislature responded to the fear of higher transit fares by enacting a package of taxes for this region that provided a substantial stream of revenue that would service the debt that had been incurred and would be incurred over the balance of that five-year plan. Clearly, the degree of the underfunding was staggering for the prior 40, 50 years. And if you actually took and analyzed the replacement cost of every component part of the transportation system, and then looked at the useful life of each component, you could see that you should be spending capital at the rate, if I remember correctly what I said in 1980, at the rate of about $3 billion a year, measured in 1980 dollars. And we were spending at that point less than $100 million a year on capital replacement. So the gap was enormous, and nobody would expect that it could be fulfilled or filled within a five-year period, and therefore the clear understanding was, and the institutional mechanisms were set up to say that every 5 years the MTA would come up with a plan and they as to how they were going to continue this rebuilding. Well, interestingly enough, and again, time limits how much I can describe, the improvements that were made over the first 15 years since 1980 resulted in an enormous increase in ridership. And it wasn't just a function of the prosperity, because obviously we went through some tough times in the 80s, and then, of course, with the tragedy of 9/11. But nonetheless, ridership has been on the rise in New York, and that is indisputably due to the fact that the system functioned better. And that people found it an amenable way to get to and from their place of employment and to and from their places of leisure as well. So what happened then? What happened then was that 5 years ago, the state government, in its wisdom, and frankly the MTA leadership at the time, unwilling to raise the question of additional sources of revenue, unwilling to deal with the the prospect of an even higher fare structure, finance their next five-year plan merely by refinancing the existing debt, which will result in the next 5 years of an enormous increase in operating revenues. This year, the MTA proposed a very sensible plan to ensure a continuation of the system in a state of good repair, and the political response to that has been appalling. The mayor's representatives on the board of the MTA voted against the plan, and the chairman has proposed specific measures to provide the system with the revenues that would support the debt, and so far there has been an inadequate response from the business community, from the legislature, and from the governmental bodies of New York, and therefore the future is highly uncertain, and clearly I think everybody with any sensibility understands that the economy of this city is tied into the well-being of this transit system, that the value of property is inextricably tied into the welfare of the public transportation system, and that what the MTA needs is a inflation-sensitive source of revenues that will fund the continuation of the capital investment in this system. And that's if just for maintaining the system, the existing system, in a state of good repair, let alone doing the things that Bob described that are critically important if you're trying to build a stronger city and bring more people into the central business district. And believing in very strongly in what Bruce said, if cities are going to grow, and New York had the largest increase in population of any city in the country in the 1990s, and this city is thriving, then we clearly need new ways of bringing people into the central business district. And the amount of funding for this is indeed a staggering sum of money. But it is both an intellectual curiosity and a political shame that people won't connect the dots between the fiscal resources and the infrastructure needs. Just one quick anecdote to end this, which I told Ricky when we had the pleasure of having breakfast in London recently. I was always asked about the fare increase. That was the press's favorite question. And I, fortunately or unfortunately, had to raise it three times when I was chairman, and that was not always much fun because of how contentious a political issue that is. But I enjoyed talking to my counterparts in Europe, where, of course, the national governments paid for the infrastructure of the transportation systems. That was never a controversy. And the only issue ever was how much do they pay to cover the operating deficits of their transportation systems. And I was talking to the chairman of the RTP in Paris, and I said to him, trying to be empathetic, have you ever had the fun of raising the fare in Paris? He said, no, I never have to raise the fare. And I looked sort of surprised and thought, what a lucky SOB he is, and asked him how come he never had to raise the fare. And he said, well, actually, he said, in France, the cost of using the transportation system is the single largest component of the consumer price index. And it was cheaper for the government to increase the amount of public subsidy every year than it was to let the fare go up and have to pay all of the wage adjustments and all of the labor contracts in France. So, thank you.